The city of Gotham gives rise to villains and darkness. Heroes and defenders of justice will rise up. The villains have chosen their dark path.
Our heroes made the choice of truth over personal happiness, and we have chosen to document it all. We are here to tell their stories. We are Gotham Undercover.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Gotham Undercover. I am Karen the Scarlet Cougar, and someone is back this week. Hello.
That's right. I'm Jeff, X-Force 11. Happy to be back.
Hey, and welcome to Gotham Undercover. We're part of the Golden Spiral Media Network. Find us at goldenspiralmedia.com or the show's Facebook page by searching for Gotham Undercover. I hope you're recharged.
I am. We had a great weekend, great weather, just good time of fellowship. So it was well needed.
Awesome. So tell us about this week's episode that we're talking about.
All right. This week's episode was called The Blade's Path. And we definitely dealt with a lot of paths and one important blade. But this was written by Zi Chun, executive story editor of Gotham. And that really shows.
Yeah.
I mean, you can really tell that somebody who's deeply involved in the week to week was involved with the writing of it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
He had all the threads.
Mm-hmm.
Well, except for a couple. Yeah. I mean, we didn't see Selena or Ivy.
Right.
But still,
a ton.
Had a handle on everything.
Yeah. So. And it was directed by Scott White, who's a co-producer on the series, and he's also done a lot of episodes of Hostages and Burn Notice.
Awesome.
Cool.
Yeah, there was a bit of a Burn Notice reunion on another show I watch.
Mm-hmm.
For what that is. What show is it? Do you know? It's The Gifted.
Yeah, it's The Gifted. Yeah, exactly.
A lot of actors from Burn Notice on that show. And it's because Matt Nix is the creator of that show, and he also created Burn Notice.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of how that works. We know how it works on Gotham.
Right.
Is that everyone was on, which show was it?
Criminal Minds.
That's right. So, yeah. They do have their favorites, don't they?
Right.
So let's talk about our ratings, and then we'll kind of slide right into our discussion.
Well, I gave it 8.5 sirens with silver sidearms. I almost had a cow when I saw Babs take out the lighter and the lipstick and make herself a gun, just kind of like the man with the golden gun in the Bond film. So
that was awesome.
Yeah.
Hers was silver because it went with her accessories.
Exactly.
It was really great. And we were on the same wavelength with the 8.5. And I give it 8.5 undercrackers, whatever they are. Because Alfred told the policeman, unless you want to search my undercrackers. And then, of course, James is like, undercrackers? Of course. Yeah. I think we can all kind of figure out what that is.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so my storyline titles, and I'm going to explain my A storyline title after I read them all.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very complicated. For two little words, it's pretty complicated. A storyline title is Passing On. The B story is The Penguin Wore Galoshes. Galoshes. Yep. C story is If Swamp Thing and Hulk Had a Baby. I was just going to name it Swamp Thing, but I wanted to do the Swamp Thing Hulk.
Yeah.
Thing. And then bonus story, The Doctor is In Again. And that we don't really have to talk much about that. That's just that Lee popped in at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
So, yeah, now we know why she's in the credits. Because of that. Now, my A story is Passing On, and there was a theme in this episode, and if the theme had to have a name, I think it might have been Passing On. Because we had, of course, we had the boy and his grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
They had a funeral. We had Raish passing on something to Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
We had Bruce, who took it upon himself to allow Raish to pass on. There was something else. Of course, Butch passing on into a new being.
Mm-hmm.
Of Solomon Grundy, born on a Monday, and so forth. And then at the very end, we had, Bruce passing on being Batman for a little bit.
Exactly.
So passing on was kind of a theme in my mind for this mm-hmm. episode.
Definitely, definitely.
I'm going to use it as the main part, which is actually like the knife, Raish,
mm-hmm.
Bruce, that storyline.
Right.
And it's almost kind of Penguin is also passing on becoming partners with Sophia as well.
Mm.
He doesn't want to be partners with her, does he?
Well, not yet.
I think he's going to have to.
Yeah.
But I think that's her plan, is to become his partner and then cheat him out of everything at the end.
Yeah. That one is very devious. I mean, kind of jump into that one because that's not the big one. But I was just impressed with, I mean, she's a Falcone, obviously. So she's got some smarts and some street creds there. But Crystal Reed is just doing a very good job playing Sophia, and Sophia adapting to the environment of, okay, I'm going to try to win him over through, you know, this nostalgia for his mother's cooking and get in. And then she comes into the bar and sees him favoring his foot, and she's giving this personal story to connect the two. And oh my goodness, she is a real player, and I just appreciated how quickly she kind of turns. I mean, even coming into the bar early, the restaurant earlier, and talking with the leader and just bringing it back, she's just got that moxie of the Falcone, and I just really appreciated how devious she is about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that she played that part really well this week, mm-hmm. and especially just the part where they would switch back and forth at them at the table at dinner.
Mm-hmm.
She was testing him with the goulash, watching every move, watching him gesture to his taster, and then watching him taste it. And then, you know, they would show Sophia's reaction to everything. And the actress was doing such a great job of coming back with those reactions. And they were in a one shot.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to act out that reaction on her own.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And she was doing a really good job, I thought, of not playing off anyone else, just doing a reaction shot. So I really appreciated that. They could have just done a two shot for the whole thing of, you know, him eating and her reacting, but mm-hmm. they just back and forth with him eating, her reacting, him eating, her reacting throughout that scene.
Yeah.
I thought it was an interesting choice, and it really highlighted both of their perspectives.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was interesting. And the whole foot rubbing thing, it was squidgy and also really, it made you understand what length she's willing to go to for this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that's a weird, like that's something like super out there or anything, because I'm sure if you feel something for someone, you're not going to balk at helping them with a pain. It doesn't matter what they look like or anything.
Yeah.
But this is, you know, a criminal mastermind, and you know, she hardly knows him, so it is a little squidgy, right?
Yeah, it is, but it really shows the link that she's going to, because she's not only rubbing, you know, his leg there and his foot, but she has put herself on a lower level than him. She's humming after he mentions his mom saying, I mean, it's, she knows the, she's got an in with him now and knows a way to proceed. But yeah, it's just like, okay.
Yeah. I didn't find it so squidgy to cringe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was like, wow, she's going all out with this. You know, it made me feel like she was really taking it to the nth level with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like she wants to be his girlfriend.
I think that's where she's trying to go.
Yeah,
because she realizes that she can't come in as that business partner because she thinks it's going to be too much of a challenge on his authority and he's going to have to snap that down. But if she can kind of come in from the side to say, no, I don't want to handle the business, but, you know, I'm going to be an influence in a different way. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or is she covering all those bases?
Who knows?
All of the above. yeah. So she is really doing a great job, I think, yeah, of communicating all that. That scene, she did a great job, and the other scene as well.
Yeah.
She really showed all the whole gamut. And even when Oswald walks out of the restaurant and she goes and talks to the cook,
mm-hmm,
and she, you know, she turns on the different personality.
Right.
Went to a lot of trouble to get that recipe. You know, she's different. She's not the same girl that was sitting there at dinner. That's also another personality that, mm-hmm, she's showing. So, yeah, that actress is doing a great job, I think.
Yeah, she is.
Again, just highlighting the talent that they get on the show. Yes. And I didn't know who she was before this. So
me neither. So
so that's good. Yeah, so that there's that whole storyline now that we've talked about that. Let's talk about Solomon Grundy, shall we?
Yeah, so basically the hospital's like, we need the space. We're just going to go dump him in Slaughter Swamp.
Yeah, and at least they got the swamp right. Mm-hmm. It's in Slaughter Swamp, which is very cool, I thought. He has a similar origin story to the comics.
Mm-hmm.
He's not mutated already. He gets mutated by whatever Indian Hill has put in Slaughter Swamp. And, you know, I would like to think it might be a combination of both, that he was special already.
Yeah.
That stuff just helped it along, maybe.
I think so, too. I think there's got to be something more, because you just got those chemicals, and that's not going to hit unless there's something else going on. I don't know if it's something magical or something like that that kind of aided the chemicals in doing their work, or something like a two powers coming together to form this. So I just don't know, but it was very cool. And I didn't notice it on the first watch, but on the second watch, you can really see his new hand glowing green.
Yeah.
Yeah. And cool. I didn't even think about that until Ed says, your hand.
So it's like, you know, super punch hand. yeah, but it came back. He is bigger and better than ever.
Yeah.
There's no Butch anymore. No. None. Mm-mm. No Butch. He doesn't remember any of his old life at all.
No.
And that's kind of consistent with Solomon Grundy. He doesn't really remember any of his old life as Cyrus, whatever.
Gold.
Cyrus Gold, yeah. If I remember correctly, he might have gotten flashes every once in a while, but it wasn't enough to actually remember his old life, right?
Yeah, from what I've seen, very limited in the comics, and then on the animated series and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think there's going to be any kind of epiphany where he remembers Butch. He's going to be this now, which is still amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Loved him in this. And I saw several places, and I agree with it. I could watch an Ed Solomon Grundy team up buddy show spinoff. I could watch that all day long.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, that was so fun. He pulls out the hot dog cart, and it's like, well, I am feeling a bit peckish.
It was great. And not just that, at the very beginning, even. Okay, so Ed's trying to get medicine. He breaks into the pharmacy, medicine. They give him sugar pills. He's getting outsmarted already. The guy distracts him with the sugar pills and sticks the thing in his hand out.
Yeah.
But he gets away and he takes these pills anyway. And then, Butch Solomon Grundy, I guess, are we going to call him Saul Solomon? What are we going to call him?
Grundy.
Let's call him Grundy.
Yeah.
Okay, so Grundy comes in, knocks him out, takes him away, and when he wakes up, he says, sugar pills my butt, because he thinks he's had this hair, which I laughed out loud at that. Because, you know, what's coming is Solomon Grundy's going to pop up. what? Which is exactly what happened. And then they have this conversation, and okay, now Ed, for a change over the last few days, is the smartest person in the room once in quite some time. And he has to like that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's going to hang around with this guy for a little bit if he's smart.
He's got the person that he's smarter than, and he's got muscle. So that it can protect him from roving gangs of people evidently on the hunt for Ed.
Right. Well, there are plenty of people that don't like Ed, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I really thought it was hilarious, the two of them together, because, first of all, Grundy was doing, like, Frankenstein stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Fire! I mean, just... I really was riveted by his portrayal of Solomon Grundy.
Yeah, Drew's doing a great job as that. Yeah.
Fantastic as Solomon Grundy. And he's not taking it all the way down to the basic level of like a grunting
mm-hmm.
sort of thing. He's up a little bit than that, you know, and it's a very subtle kind of simpleness.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes sense, but it's not that kind of blundering, you know, idiocy.
Right.
He's questing to find out who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a sense of what's going on around him.
Yeah.
So it's not just him walking in and going, me smash everything. You know, he's actually got a point to what he's doing. And I really like how they're playing it.
Yeah, me too. I really appreciate the way that they're bringing it in, and it seems that Ed is just a buoy to him to help him and lead him in this process. Now, it's so fun to kind of see that we kind of do see that he does feel pain, but it's mm-hmm. not exactly on the same level as a normal person. I mean, but it is interesting to see how he plays it. And I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen next with him.
Yeah, me too. And right now, Ed is saying, well, you know, once I get my smarts back, we'll look into finding out. I think they're going to actually form a bit of a bond for now.
Yeah, me too.
He is going to help Grundy with some stuff. I don't think that their team up is gonna end as soon as Ed gets his smarts back.
No, huh?
He's going to see the value in keeping a bodyguard like him around.
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, as Ed gets smarter, he's going to kind of clue in to the fact that Grundy could be helpful, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And not to mention the fact that he still looks like Butch enough that he could kind of scare someone who might not be expecting Butch to be around.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, there's that kind of thing happening, too. Very intriguing storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Places we can go. And, you know, that led us to the underground fighting ring, so that brought us to that little snapshot of Lee at the end.
Right.
Being the doctor. And
yeah, the doctor for Cherry's Fight Club, basically.
So she's back in town. Why is she back in Gotham if she doesn't want to have anything to do with Jim? Who knows?
Well, she, you know, keeps dragging her back in.
I know. I keep trying to get out, but it keeps pulling me back. Yeah, I don't know what's up with her. We'll find out, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Looks like maybe, you know, next episode we'll get some more info on Cherry and with fighting with Solomon, so we'll see.
I'm guessing he wins a lot.
Yeah.
Because he can go a long time without getting hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll find out. And also, Ed is going to come face to face with Lee. That's where we were right at the end of the episode.
Right.
We'll find out what happens there as well. Mm-hmm. Because the guy said, Cherry wants you to see the new guy.
Yeah.
So that's like first up on the docket for the next episode. Okay, so passing on. Now, this is all that stuff I was talking about. And it all revolves around this knife and what is going to happen with it. Bruce is already just racked with guilt.
Yeah. I appreciate that because I think he sees himself in this kid who was innocent and got caught up in things, and it cost him his life, not just the guy, his family, but just knowing that he had to choose, and he chose, and this kid died, and nobody can tell him that it's not his fault. And you just see that anguish there, and that's just driving him to his work and driving him to work harder and try to avenge the death. So I just really appreciate he's diving into his work. He's been up for several days, and Alfred's trying to break him away, and we find out the reason he's trying to break him away is to go to the funeral. And so he's like, I understand, but we need to go to the funeral. So yeah, I really appreciated that this death is driving him further into his work.
Right, right. And he feels completely responsible for it, even though I think both of those people, the grandfather and the grandson, knew that if they had to die in order to keep that knife out of the hands of Raish,
mm-hmm.
they would.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the kid actually said that no matter what, we have to keep it out of his hands.
Right. And in that episode, we see the translation that Bruce brings back up, and they knew how important it was. And so it really shows that he's, you know, he's figuring out, he's going through the doctor's notes and figuring out that what it kind of means, and he doesn't know fully, but he's got a good picture. So it just shows his study, you know, skills of studying and looking deep into things. And that just reminds me back of the book that we reviewed and just kind of the background we saw of what an avid reader and studier Bruce is. And now we're getting to see that actually on screen here.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah. I also love it when Alfred and James team up.
Mm-hmm.
They make such a great pair.
I was, you know, they were at odds with each other there at the funeral and kind of poking each other and saying, you need to do better, you need to do better. But when it comes down to it, they're looking after Bruce and trying to look out for his best interest, and they're going in full bore. And I just loved Alfred. I mean, how many weapons? I lost count of how many weapons he had on him. And I'm like,
more than James, that's for sure. And also, I liked the communication they had going, the silent communication.
Oh, that was awesome.
James was questioning that guard and, you know, hinting that that guard might not be all that he seemed, and kind of making sure that Alfred got the gist of what he was saying so that they were on the same page.
Right.
And you knew that Alfred got it when he initiated the fight. Which was fantastic, I thought. You know, he said, "So you know what else I've been thinking? Where are the real gods?" You know, then they start the fight. I expected, wham, bing, the screen turning sideways.
Oh, yeah, but it's so cool because they have that level of trust and communication, but they also both have that shared military background. And so they just, you know, it's like they went at it and they're all, you know, knocking out all the guards, killing them and just going after it. And it was very cool, a very cool action scene.
It was. And, of course, warranted. They're all bad guys, all of them.
Right, yeah. Raish is already... you know, got all of his, because, I mean, I didn't even think about it the first time until later, but I mean, like, okay, they let Barbara in with a purse, let alone a purse with a lighter, and they don't let you do that in prison, even the worst ones.
They don't let you all the way in to the guy's cell when he's in a cell like that.
Right.
Don't. That a person's in a cell like that, and the only people that get to go in are like the police and doctors and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, the fact that she got in meant that those guards are on the take. So, yeah, they were all his guys. And that level of communication and trust, it astounds me that they write that subtlety in as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to think that if the three of them work together much more, Harvey and James and Alfred, that they would be unstoppable. 'Cause Harvey also, even though he's brash and he can be a bit of a crasher, he gets the subtleties of James's cues.
Right.
And he's also worked with Alfred in other places. And I think he could work on getting hints from him as well.
Yeah.
I don't think he's quite as good as James is on that. But I think if they work together a little bit more, they could maybe a little more seamless. I think that would be. But right now, Harvey's kind of stuck where he is.
Yeah, he's buried under paperwork and doing things that he doesn't like to do so he can hold that job down. And Jim's still not happy about it. And neither is Harvey. But
no.
And
I think that's why Harvey's still there.
Yeah.
Because he knows that if someone else took that job, maybe the papers would be getting processed faster and the criminals would be getting out on the street faster. You know, maybe he's trying to slow things down and, you know, that's his way of doing what he can. I don't know. I'd like to think he's the good guy.
Yeah. I believe he is. And I believe he's just longing for the day when things are going to be different, but he's looking out for those GCPD and holding the line as much as he can.
Yeah. I think he is. 'Cause I think deep down he's a good guy.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we talked a little bit about Barbara getting in.
Yeah. So it's very interesting because, Raish says that he sent her in to be his eyes and ears, but she became something more. And then she says, "What about what you promised me?"
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, what is that, and what is that going to be? And so he basically passes on something to her. She starts, I mean, it passes through the wall there, and she starts glowing. So give me your thoughts on that.
Okay. Well, he says something to the effect, as I promised you power more than you'd ever imagined, or something.
Yeah, something. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then we also know that he resurrected her in the Lazarus pit.
Mm-hmm.
So she has been affected by the Lazarus pit. Now, he presses his hand on that wall, and she presses her hand on it. And one of the things I had talked about a few weeks ago is the transference of souls.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, they did it with a dagger once before, but I know that it's also been written that if you have used the Lazarus pit, you have a connection to everyone else who has used the Lazarus pit.
Interesting.
Perhaps he transferred his soul or a part of it into her. So he's still alive in her, like he's piggybacking.
Okay.
At least that is one of my theories.
And I can definitely, after you sharing that the other week, I can definitely see that. So he's got a much younger body that's not, you know, hundreds of years old. But what's, I mean, is that his end game, just to have a new body? I mean, is he going...
After a certain amount of time, you have to.
Right.
So his end game is just to find a new host. He thinks he's found that in Bruce. Now, I don't think that's going to happen, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be Bruce. Now, who he's going to pick, I don't know. But I think he is piggybacking on Barbara. I mean, that's my theory.
So it's going to be interesting to see. So we've seen Barbara be multiple different people through this series.
Yeah.
And we're now going to maybe see some inkling of her not being in control and him being in control. And then
if my theory is right.
Right. And then if, you know, he's going to find out through the process of the season that, you know, Bruce can't be that fit. So he's got to pick somebody else.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, the Lazarus pit makes you a little crazy. She was already crazy. So sometimes it makes you sane if you're already crazy. But now she's got rage inside her.
Mm-hmm.
What is that going to do? And there's all that talk of her being Harley Quinn. So this could push her over into that category.
Wow.
Hmm. Having someone piggyback on her soul.
Yeah, it's just interesting to see. And I like the way that they're doing this thing to keep us guessing and making things interesting with the same characters that we've seen, you know, through the past few seasons, giving them new roles and allowing them to stretch their wings that way.
Yeah. Oh, unless they're going to make Lee Harley, because she is back.
Yeah.
As a doctor.
I don't know.
I don't know. Because, you know, Harley Quinn was a doctor.
Yep. Yep.
So, yeah, we'll find out. I mean, we're supposed to have seen her. I don't know whether they're sticking to that or not.
Me neither.
You know, they change their minds all the time, these showrunners. We really shouldn't hold them to something they said last season. I'm putting it out there for everyone that, you know, don't hold on to that promise. I mean, I did that with Lost, and they admitted that a lot of their stuff was just like, okay, we made it up as we went along. So
yeah, that was me too. So yeah.
I was never disappointed in Lost. But
no, me neither. I think when the writers like Lost and what we've seen season two coming forward of Gotham, is the writers are doing things well. They may have to drop back and punt and adjust and not truly follow all those threads, but the way that they're doing things keeps things interesting, and the way that it draws people who've never read the comics and people who have in just warrants giving them a little grace in that area.
Right. Yeah. Now, okay, so at the end of this episode, well, at the end of Bruce and Raish's interactions,
mm-hmm.
Raish is talking to him and saying, you know, taunting him.
Right.
And telling him that, you know, if you don't kill me, I'm just going to go away. And then later on, I'll come back and I'll kill everyone close to you. And Bruce, that's when he decides
mm-hmm.
he's going to kill him. Not when he's being threatened, when the people he loves are being threatened.
Right. And that's the interesting thing, that even at this point, I think Bruce can see some type of life other than being a vigilante. Like he can see an end to things and see a time when he doesn't need to do that. And so we kind of get the role reversal later on, where Batman is the real person and Bruce is the mask for most parts. And so we see him fighting so hard to have that happy ending and protecting future people.
Exactly. Yeah, I like that as well. And he does end up killing him. And there are a lot of people very angry about this. And one of the things I would say is, okay, you need to remember, Batman doesn't not kill anyone in his whole career. He doesn't use guns.
Right.
So he kills people. He just doesn't use guns. It's kind of Superman's thing not to kill people.
Mm-hmm.
Batman doesn't love killing people, but if it's warranted, if he has no other choice, he will. He just will not use a gun. So, yeah, this isn't Elseworlds. He would not have done this as a youth.
Right.
In the regular comic, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. This is not a thing that Batman wouldn't have done.
Exactly. And I think it gives us the movement of his character and gives us opportunity for him to grow. I mean, he gets the talk from Jim about, you know, you're still that boy, you're still that guy. And then Alfred talks about that, how he's gone off the path, and then Alfred assures him that, you know, it's going to be a long, bumpy road, but you can come back on that path. So I appreciate that we're seeing growth, and he's just, Bruce is just ready to give it up. He's ready to throw the outfit in the fire, but it's Alfred who's pulling him back and saying, listen, you were right, I was wrong, you can make a difference in here in this city. And so I just appreciate that you see that he is not a formed character. He's not fully formed. He's still young. And all these things are going to work together to build the character of who he is later on. And I like that it's not just, you know, 90 miles an hour full ahead towards Batman, that it's true to life, where you have setbacks and you have hard times that grow you up and make you who you are.
Mm-hmm. And of course, for Batman, it's going to be much harder than any normal kid. Batman is a very troubled person.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about Bruce Wayne. I'm talking about Batman.
Exactly. I mean, and that's the thing. He learns from all this. He takes it all in and takes those hard times and has to adapt and be the hard character when he has to be. But I just, like I said, I appreciate that we're seeing these challenges in his character and this growth in him.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. So Elseworlds, yes. Out of the Realm of Possibility, no.
Exactly.
And I also appreciated their use of fire in the episode, as usual. Now, I brought up last week when you weren't here that they used fire to a lovely degree.
Yeah.
But this episode, there was a fire going at the memorial service.
Mm-hmm.
So to show like kind of the inner turmoil inside Bruce, maybe.
Right.
And also the fight between Alfred and James.
Yeah.
I kind of got that sort of a vibe that it was, you know, something kind of fiery happening there.
Right.
Also, there was fire going when he was talking to Raish the whole time. Mm-hmm. Fire burning in there. And that was just almost like it was burning his soul, like darkening his soul at that point. And of course, fire when he was trying to burn his suit.
Yeah.
So almost like a rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
Him, you know, deciding he was going to step back.
Well, and even in the moment where he's going to steal the knife and go out on his mission, you can see the embers and the small flicker of flame in the fireplace. So it's like it's almost out. It's almost dark. It's almost there, but not quite. There's still that low embers and that low flame.
A little bit, yeah. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
He was just full of fire in this episode. So, yeah, I love how they use imagery in these shows, especially for some reason. It's just all over the place. Fire is a big thing to them. Windows and light.
Yeah, I mean, the Iceberg Lounge is so striking with that light, that window behind the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, and when they were eating, the two of them, I know they weren't in the Iceberg Lounge, but there was light that was coming in behind Sophia, and there wasn't light on the side with Oswald. So
right.
It's dark as to what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
She knows what's going on. And I thought that was really interesting as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Very cool. You guys, we know what you're doing. I see what you did there. So, you think we got everything?
I think we did.
Okay. Now, there's no feedback from anyone outside the show. However, I do have a little apology to make to you. In that you have seen The Golden Child. It was someone else, some other co-host of mine that I was talking to. I'm sorry to you about this.
I want the knife. Please.
So, actually know about The Golden Child.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry.
No problem.
Impugn you. And I wanted to say it was not Jeff, everyone.
Yeah.
It was Charles. To the Phantom Zone. I think it was Charles. So he doesn't listen to this. So. But if you would like to give us feedback so I don't have to apologize to Jeff next. Oh, I'm not going to be here next week, but the week after. Here's what you can do.
Hey, this is Martin Flash.
And I'm Cammy.
Here's what you can do.
To have your feedback heard and read on Gotham Undercover, please submit by our weekly deadline of Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/Gotham Undercover. And follow the show on Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram at GothamGSM. Please send us your feedback at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can type out your thoughts, leave a voice message using the provided SpeakPipe widget, or you can call 304-837-2278. To find the complete list of Golden Spiral Media podcasts and to leave your 5-star reviews, simply go to goldenspiralmedia.com/apple. Now, here are your hosts, Karen and Jeff.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, thanks, John.
And I'm guessing that you'll be hearing him next week while I'm out.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll have to line up the substitute.
Right. Yeah, so I won't be on either of my podcasts next week, but I'm sure you guys will be great without me.
Yeah, we'll miss you, but everybody deserves a break.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not much of a break, but I'll be down in Florida doing nothing.
Well, that's a good thing. Sometimes you just need to get away and do nothing.
Exactly. So we have a promo for another Golden Spire Manita podcast.
Yes, we do. So take a listen.
Hi, I'm Brian.
I'm Kyle.
And I'm Ruthie.
And we host
The Walking Dead
and Fear the Walking Dead.
Talk Through, a Golden Spire Media podcast dedicated to
The Walking Dead
and Fear the Walking Dead
TV shows on AMC. Each episode, we break down what happened, what we think will happen, and talk through our listener feedback.
Because our listeners are very important to us. Isn't that right, Kyle?
Yes, indeed.
Subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app.
Or visit us on our website, walkingdeadtalkthrough.com.
And join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/walkingdeadgsm.
See you soon, survivors.
That's right, and The Walking Dead kicks back off this Sunday.
I know, I'm so excited.
Well, I gave it up on it, but it's a good series, but it was just a little too hard for me last season.
I'm sorry. Yeah. A little too gory last season?
Yeah, it was a little too much. So.
Well, see, it's not about the zombies, Jeff.
Well, I know that, and the stories are good, and I enjoy the twists and turns, but it was just, I mean, it was a little too intense for me, so, but it, that, you know, yeah.
Yeah, with the saviors are a little hardcore.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, but man, I dig it so much. I read the comic, so.
Yeah.
There's that. I'm, for some reason, I'm just completely desensitized to it. And that character study stuff.
Yeah.
I love it. What would happen if people were thrown into the middle of this apocalyptic world?
Right. And Brian and Ruthie do a great job with the podcast, so people will really enjoy their analysis and the breakdown and everybody's feedback.
They do. I listen to them, too. Anything that has to do with comic books. Okay, so shall we talk about...
What is this bizarre segue that's happening right now?
Phrasing?
The following program contains coarse language and nudity. Your discretion is advised.
I like this one. When I play that one for Emily, she says, I love that one because there can't be nudity on a podcast. So yeah, there can. It's just no one can see it. So so let's talk about the next episode. And I am so excited for this arc.
Oh, me too. I mean, like I said, I come from a little newer Batman readership. And so... seeing Professor Pig in that was coming this season, I was like, oh my goodness, this is going to be interesting.
And did you see the promo for it?
Mm-hmm, and it's in the blog post.
Oh, thank goodness, because that is creepy. And we also have another reason to be excited about it, which we will have to tell you guys about later, like closer to the end of the year.
That's right. So
I cannot wait. So this is a dark night, a hog day afternoon. Gordon and Bullock are hot on a serial killer. He is creepy. Who has been assassinating cops and dressing his victims in the severed heads of pigs as his signature mark. Get it? Cops, pigs.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Sophia tries to win over Penguin, and Tompkins, Nigma, and Grundy find themselves an unlikely home at Cherry's place in the all-new A Dark Night, A Hog Day Afternoon episode of Gotham, airing Thursday, October 26th at 8 p.m. on Fox.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness. I cannot wait. So Tompkins, Nigma, and Grundy are all going to be living together at Cherry's. That's interesting. Come and knock on the door. Can you see, you know, the opening to that show, right?
Mm-hmm.
That scene where he's riding a bike and he looks at a girl and he falls into the sand. That's Grundy. Like a hot dog cart going by. Oh, Grundy want hot dog. And he falls off into the... Oh, my goodness. That would be great. Yeah, I can't wait. I really cannot wait for this arc. It's going to be a 4-part arc with this serial killer. And you guys are going to be creeped out by that thing. He's played by someone you might know from another show that was on this network called Fringe.
That's right. That's right.
Secret or something. It's not in this summary.
Yeah. Well, I think they're playing it really close because they have only released the photos for this next episode, which he's not in any of those photos. And they haven't released any photos from the next episode. As soon as they do, I'll get them up. But they are being very secretive about him, I think, because of keeping it under wraps.
Okay, well, he's an actor you might know from a show called Fringe.
Yes.
So I'll say that, at least. And not one of the main stars, but you'll know him if you watched Fringe. So there's that. And I think that will end us for today.
That's right.
Yep. So we'll see you next time. I'll see you in a couple weeks, and Jeff will see you next week.
That's right.